to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for racing and breeding in the Mid-Atlantic. On the web at theracingbiz.com. On the radio, on ESPN Richmond, it's Off to the Races. Here's Nick Hahn.
It's perhaps the one Saturday of the year I can get away with playing some of my Beatles and British rock, my Led Zeppelin, my Animals, my Rolling Stones. You'll hear all of that on Off to the Races. In honor of Royal Ascot racing underway, tune in. There won't be any cartoons on NBC this morning. They're covering racing from Royal Ascot. Derby Bill, I'm sure, will be following all the action. We'll have some of his thoughts and picks on racing at Royal Ascot later in the show. Thanks for spending your Saturday mornings with us on Off to the Races. Today, we will recap the Belmont Stakes, a field of eight that went to the gate. As tradition dictates, we'll go wire to wire in the Belmont Stakes, along with the winner, who we'll share with you in just a few moments. Darryl Wood returns on Off to the Races in his leadoff position. We'll talk to Darryl here in about 4 or 5 minutes. Jill Byrne, who is getting the meet prepared at Colonial Downs, Vice President of Racing Operations at Colonial Downs. She went out, she's been kind of working her way and running around Churchill. And it's either Churchill where she lives or Churchill the racetrack that is the contract purchaser of Colonial Downs. By the way, Churchill Downs did sell 115 acres at Calder for $29 million? Maybe been $29 million to Link Logistics. That is part of, not directly a part, but it kind of serves as the replacement for the purchase of Colonial Downs by Churchill. So just another step in bringing Colonial Downs into the Churchill family of racetracks. So that's underway. But also on today's show, July 1st is a big day. That's when HISA, the Horse Integrity and Safety Authority, comes to life fully, or not, maybe not fully, but at least comes to life. And registrations will be part of it. And what HISA will do, as much of the authority in horse racing gets transferred from the stakes to this federal body, and just the logistics and complications of it, will be explained by Alan Foreman, who is counsel for the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. This is an important explanation of what HISA does and what it doesn't do, and probably more important, when it does it. And this phased approach that is going to be taken to streamline horse racing, a very important exercise, an overhaul this industry hasn't seen in quite some time, in my lifetime, in terms of covering horse racing. I've never seen anything as large as this underway to streamline horse racing. It's much needed, and we'll get a really good explanation from Alan Foreman here at about 10:30. But let's go to recap some racing. The Belmont Stakes last weekend. We the People, the morning line favorite at 2-1 in the morning line, went off at nearly 4-1. Mo Donegal, Jerry Crawford was on the show a while back when he won the Wood Memorial, became the post-time favorite at a little bit over 2.5 to 1 here for Todd Pletcher. There was a filly in the race, Nest. There was a Colonial Downs starter in the race, Barber Road. And, of course, the Derby winner, Rich Strike, also was in this field. Larry Colmes gives us wire-to-wire coverage of the 2022 Belmont Stakes.
In the final leg of this Triple Crown, they're all in line, and we are ready for the start. They're off in the Belmont Stakes, and the filly Nest stumbled coming out of the gate, and We the People goes out to the early lead. Skippy Longstocking is away running in second. Golden Glider came out third. Barber Road much closer to the pace today. And Nest is being sent through an opening on the inside after that early stumble. And Creative Minister, the Kentucky Derby winners near second strike is last now, and Bo Donegal is gone by him. So it's we, the people, leading the way to a 23.99 opening quarter mile. It's a decent pace. He's on top by a length and a half. Skippy Longstocking on the outside second. Nest has made her way up into third as they make their way to the backstretch here. And then it's a three-wide run for Golden Glider. Mo Donegal between horses. Creative Minister down on the inside. Barbara Rhoda was closer, has been taken back to second last. And Sonny Leone and Rich Stryker are going to have to come from dead last here. They're trailing the field after a 48.49 half mile. So up the backstretch in the Belmont, we the people and Fabian Pratt, three-quarters of a length ahead of Skippy Longstocking, who continues to stick with his front runner up the backstretch. Then Golden Glider, Nest, Mo Donegal to the outside. Creative Minister is next. Then Barbara Road, he's got five and a half to make up. Ridge Strike continues to race at the back of the pack. The Kentucky Derby winner is last up the backstretch, three-quarters up in 113.23 seconds. They race for the far turn. We the people has been in front all the way so far. The lead is three-quarters of a length over Skippy Longstocking. And then it's Nest on the inside in third. She's just in behind the leader. O'Donegal is fourth on the outside. Meanwhile, Ridge Strike is still last, and he's being ridden to go now by Sonny Leone at the back of the pack. Around the far turn, we the people trying to take him every step of the way. Skippy Longstocking has been second throughout. Nest is third, just in behind them. The filly is just in behind the front-running pair, and Mo Donegal is moving on the outside. Rich Strike is on the blast, but he's got a lot of work to do. Skippy Longstocking has come up to the neck of we the people, and Mo Donegal comes charging up on the outside, and they're into the stretch, and Mo Donegal has taken the lead as they arrive from the final furlong. Nest is moved up into second, then we the people, and Skippy Longstocking. It is going to be Mike Rapoli 1-2. Mo Donegal and Nest, Mo Donegal and Iran Ortiz have won the Belmont Stakes.
At 2 minutes, 28 seconds, and 28 hundredths, I don't think Secretariat was shaking in his grave about his track record of 224, but still an impressive win by Mo Donegal, who now $7.20 for the win. Todd Pletcher running 1-2 there with the Philly Nest getting second. So the Ortiz brothers running 1-2. Same owner, same trainer. Family jockeys there, the two brothers, Jose and Irad Ortiz. And I think I saw somewhere they were also bred by the same breeder. So, yeah, the family was in place at Belmont Park. Congratulations to those connections. And maybe Mo Donegal, just by a little bit of daylight, takes the lead in the three-year-old division, colt division, ahead of horses like Epicenter and early voting, very tight. So yeah, no standout in the three-year-old division. Someone who does stand out is Daryl Wood, who now joins us on Off to the Races. It's been a couple of weeks, Daryl. We missed you.
Yeah, we talked to you 2 weeks ago from the sand and the waves. But yeah, was off last week, but ready to attack because we're just a little bit more than 3 weeks away from the start of racing. At Colonial Downs is what we all look forward to every year. July 11th, opening day at 1:45. So, yeah, it's the time of year and ready to rock and roll.
It's Father's Day weekend, so perhaps an opportunity if you can't spend time with your father today, maybe you can set something up in the future, and one of those things could be a day at Colonial Downs. How are things looking for the preparation for the meet? And you know, what's happening before the meet?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Father's Day because back until 2013, Father's Day was always a really popular day at the track. We get crowds of 5,000-6,000 people, and it was just a great place for a family, you know, to spend an afternoon. So hopefully as the years go on and the schedule increases, maybe Father's Day will be a part of that again. But I know at Colonial Downs, you're going to have Jill Byrne on the show here shortly. She's VP of racing, and her, along with Carlos Garcia, who was the stall superintendent, and Allison DeLuca, who was the director of racing, still at Tampa Bay Downs. But they spent most of the week trying to figure out the puzzle of assigning horses stalls into the 840 spaces available on the backstretch. Jill's got an overflow amount of horses, which is great for the business, great for the racing fans. you know, the stables are trying to find help when they to be able to ship to Virginia. So it's a constantly evolving schematic that Jill is trying to figure out, and she'll talk more about it, I'm sure. But it looks like the barn area is going to be full. The barn area opens a week from Monday, and the track opens for training a week from Tuesday. So again, that's kind of a morning type deal that fans can get out there and have a cup of coffee and look at the check out the morning workouts. But yeah, that begins a week from this coming Monday and Tuesday. So we're getting close, and full fields hopefully this year.
Opening day, July 11th, for the meet at Colonial Downs, presented by Woodford Reserve. And the pick five with a 12% takeout, a carryover feature this year. Interesting new wager that's going to greet patrons at the beginning of the meet.
Big deal. Used to be, I know the folks had, tried getting a pick five with a carryover. The past couple of years it didn't fly, but this year it did fly. And again, that 12% takeout rate is just very attractive. It's going to be the last five races of the card every day, so it doesn't matter if there's 9, 10, 11, 8 races. You know it's the last five races. So that's going to be a big deal. In August, there's going to be a bet on Mondays. It's going to be the Monday Mid-Atlantic Pick 4, two races from Colonial and two from Monmouth at the Jersey Shore. So really a couple enticing wagers. And I think, Nick, one of the more interesting things available for racing, and this is a and a great novel effort to try to get a labor force out there. Frank Petromala, who runs the HPPA, has put together a three-day course to train high school and college students how to be hot walkers. And that's going to be July, I think it's 6th through 8th. It's on our website, virginiahorseracing.com. But anybody that wants to, from ground zero, learn the aspects of being able to cool a horse off after they train in the morning, to be able to tend to a horse during the morning training hours. This is a free three-day course. Tuition's been waived, and it gives anybody that's ever wanted to get into racing and horses a chance to become educated and actually fulfill that passion immediately after the class. So check that out, virginiahorseracing.com. But a hot walker training course is coming up here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, the great opportunity there. I had a chance to do some of that when I worked with the retired thoroughbreds up at Montpelier. It's very rewarding. I would highly encourage it. Even if you have just the smallest interest in horse racing, you'd be surprised when you get up close to these horses what it did for my soul. I'm sure it will do it for many others. Daryl, yeah, great job laying down the bunt in the leadoff spot and hustling down the first base line. We'll talk to you later. By the way, no show next week, so you'll get yet another Saturday morning off before the long sustained run that includes the 9 weeks at Colonial Downs.
Hey, batting leadoff for Jill Byrne is an honor.
On base, we'll see here in a moment. Jill Byrne has been doing so many things at Colonial Downs. Maybe because she can get Daryl Wood around the corners here and bring him home. We're going to be reaching out for Jill Byrne. By the way, the opening stake at Royal Ascot this morning was won by Holloway Boy at 40-1. Wearing red and white silks, kind of doing his Rich Strike imitation. That was actually his first start in a two-year-old I saw with the Chessum, so had an opportunity to see that. I think they've run perhaps the second race by now, but NBC doing the coverage there at Royal Ascot. The Queen will not be in attendance for the first time in her reign. In 70 years, the 96-year-old has some mobility issues that is preventing her, I should say, from attending. She did not attend during the COVID year when it was closed to the public. But yeah, the first time in 70 years, although she does have a horse in the race, I think. Was it, I think Rich... Oh, no, Reach for Moon actually ran second in the Hampton Stakes. But she does have a horse running today, I saw. We'll get those updates a little bit later. But now on off to the races. You know, we mentioned Jill Byrne. Seen her doing a number of different jobs around the racetrack. She joked the other day in the Racing Commission meeting that she might see her on a tractor this year. So with her doing all those different jobs, we just figured we'd have her introduce herself here on off to the races. Here's Jill Byrne 10 years ago when she was working for Churchill Downs hosting their signal.
Here it is, the infamous third turn at Churchill Downs. I'm in the infield. This is Thursday, all quiet in here right now, but soon the infield will be buzzing on Oaks and Kentucky Derby Day. 30, 40,000 people in here having a blast, watching the horses race around. Lots to do here in the infield. Well, welcome to Kentucky Derby. I'm Jill Byrne, and as you can see, they're getting things ready in here for the crush that will be Kentucky Oaks and Kentucky Derby Day. So much to get caught up on. Let's catch you up on some of those Derby horses. I'll have another making a fantastic appearance still on the track. He drew post 19. A lot of people, what are we going to do? I think he'll be fine. He'll get a position throughout. Union Ray.
On off to the races. And Jill, good morning. How do you have energy to go out for a run with all the stuff that you've been doing in preparation for the week? What's your secret?
Running keeps me sane. I love to run. It's a great way to, you know, kind of get away from everything, put my music on and go, whether I'm running the turf course at Colonial and the dirt track at Colonial through the stable area, or like this morning, I decided to hit the Capitol Trail here in Richmond and the Libby Hill Death Steps in Churchill. So it's a great way to just get away from it for a while and enjoy all the peace. But no, it's very exciting times as we're getting ready for opening of Colonial Downs 2022. And we have horses arriving. Stable area opens a week from Monday, the 27th of June. So as you can imagine, got a lot happening. And the place, the track and the facility, stable area just couldn't look better than it does right now. So very, very proud of my entire team that's been working so hard to get it ready for horses and horsemen.
July 11th is a date we've circled for quite some time, and now it's really starting to draw closer. Last year, maybe just give us an update, you know, for new things to look at during the meet. Got a couple questions afterwards, but, you know, what are just some thoughts on the meet leading up, some new things? Who are some of the trainers, perhaps, that are coming in?
Yeah, well, as you can imagine, with, you know, we have two more weeks of racing, so six more days, and then with purses projected to be, you know, estimated around $625,000 a day, and the reputation of our incredible track surfaces, we've had a lot of interest. We have probably over 1,000 stall applicants, so, you know, for that many horses, for about 850 stalls. So it's been, you know, kind of a jigsaw puzzle, trying to fit everybody in. We have, you know, a lot of people coming back from last year. Of course, our Virginia group, who have been, you know, the reason all this great racing is back with all of their support, Susan Cooney, Karen Godsey, Sarah Nagel, Ferris Allen, all those will be back and stabled. But we also have some trainers coming from Chicago with Hawthorne. It actually works out well. They close the thoroughbred meet and have a standardbred meet right at the same time we're running. So Larry Ravelli's got a stable. He's bringing his entire stable. Chris Block, Mike and Joel Campbell, Tony Mitchell. You know, so some new faces for Colonial Downs. And then like Michelle Lovell, who was second leading trainer last year from Kentucky. She's coming back. Mike Tomlinson, I know that really nice horse that he has running, Conniger, who just, I think, either set or equaled a track record at Churchill. He broke his maiden here at Colonial last summer. Mike Maker, Dallas Stewart, you know, just, and then of course, you know, the usual, Mike Stidham, who's always one of our perennial leading trainers, Graham Motion, Cam Gambolotti coming from Florida, Mike Maker. Yeah, just all kinds of, regulars, new faces, so we're looking forward to accommodating everybody.
So in an industry that's seeing a shrinking foal population and with starters per race declining in a number of different venues, Colonial Downs is in overfill mode, which is just great to see.
The interest is there, but as everybody knows throughout the country, you know, even places that have record high purses, it is still, difficult to fill a lot of races with a lot of tracks running at the same time. But yes, we have, you know, great reputation for our track surfaces and the facility. So we're hoping to keep up our record setting field size this summer.
You mentioned Michelle Lovell, Just won the Mighty Bo Stakes again. Of course, that horse, I think, won on the dirt and the turf at Colonial Downs on his way. So, congratulations to Michelle. Looking forward to seeing her stable back at Colonial. It's Father's Day weekend. Your father, Peter Howe, a renowned horse trainer in different equine venues. What is this weekend? It's a little bit cooler. It's going to be a great day tomorrow, but just maybe thoughts on Father's Day weekend and your father.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's the reason I'm where I am in the horse industry, obviously. My father and my mother. I was basically born into this, and thanks to his confidence in me from the time I was, 2-3 years old, made it possible for me, to learn everything in this industry. And a lot of us, have grown up in this business. That's what we've done all our lives, one side of it or another, or all sides, as I've done, and all angles. So, of course, Father's Day, very important. And I will be actually heading up to Charlottesville tonight and then spend time with family tomorrow. So looking forward to that, as it'll probably be my last day of not being at the track 7 days a week. So one kind of day away to enjoy, but really looking forward to all of our staff coming back. They're, all coming in now for Colonial and the horsemen arriving. All the hard work that the staff puts in year round to get to this point, and the entire Colonial Downs team. And this is when it gets fun. So looking forward to seeing everybody arriving.
Yeah. One last hurrah before the meet at Colonial Downs, brought to you by Woodford Reserve. And that meet starts July 11th. One thing new this year will be the HISA registration and just sort of the phased in approach that HISA is doing. While it hasn't been the best week in terms of implementation, and there's been a little bit of recoil from the very beginning, you've stressed how simple this is. This is really not a big deal, certainly in this phase. Anything for the horsemen and just maybe the general public? We have a very important interview with Alan Foreman on the other half of the break here, but just maybe some thoughts locally, what that means and what to expect for the upcoming meet.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's the registration. At first, they had a couple issues with their website, but the registration is very simple. And I encourage any horseman, anybody in the industry who is required to be registered, to just go on their site and get it done. It took me less than 3 minutes to do it. All of our staff is getting registered as they need to be. We've been really reaching out to horsemen, trainers, owners, and trying to help them through the process and making sure that they know that this has to be done. Because, we'll be taking entries for opening day on July 6th, and, if horses and trainers aren't registered, it's going to become difficult. They're going to end up, potentially being scratched. We certainly don't want that to happen. We are also at Colonial. We'll have computers in the racing office and people dedicated to help anybody on site there who still needs to be registered. So I encourage anyone who hasn't and might need a little help, come into the racing office at Colonial. We'll help you through it on the computers and get it done. So, that piece to it, yes, definitely simple. And I just said, get it done. But there is a great deal that is going to fall on, a lot of the staff at the racetracks and the racetracks in order to implement this. But I know you mentioned Alan Foreman, and I think, the states and the racing jurisdictions like Colonial Downs, we have an edge already because, Alan Foreman worked so hard to create, the Mid-Atlantic Strategic Alliance to, reduce the equine fatalities and injuries, and really created a template which HISA has pulled from for so many of the safety aspects and health aspects to the protocols that will be in place. So I feel that we're way ahead of the curve because of that. adherence to what he had put in place for the Mid-Atlantic racing jurisdictions, which has been a big help for us to know that we're compliant in so many ways. And, you know, it's just really staffing to make sure we have plenty of staff to keep up with the data and the paperwork. And, you know, we have an incredible equine medical director and Dr. Ada Carruthers. We have Doc Rick Harden, who's our safety officer. So I feel that we're in good shape. Plus, I know we have two fantastic racing track facilities and everything like that in place, and great stewards. So, you know, I'm feeling very confident heading into it that we are in full compliance from the safety standpoint.
The safety record has been outstanding. You've set such a high mark. We hope that you continue to live up to it throughout the meet in 2022. Jill, thanks for spending some time with us. Good luck with the upcoming meet. I'll be seeing more of you. May not be talking to you as much, just with all, everything that you have going on, but appreciate everything you've done with the turnaround, and good luck with the upcoming meet.
Thanks, and I encourage everybody to go to our website, colonialdowns.com, and look at all the big events we're going to be having at the track, giveaways. It's more racing, more fun is our tagline, and we're looking forward to it.
Secretariat t-shirts opening day, becoming a tradition at Colonial. So thanks, Jill, and we'll let you get a towel and cool off a little bit. It's cooled down a little bit. It's not that cool yet, but yeah, thanks for spending time with us this morning.
All right, thanks, Nick.
Joining us this morning on Off to the Races. We're going to head to break here on Off to the Races. We'll let the animals. I'm not sure that was one of the Queen's favorites over the years. Love the animals, man. I am really a sucker for British rock. I've really got the case of the British blues pretty bad there. You're listening to Off to the Races. When we come back, we'll be living the dream. Frank Vespi on tape interviewing Alan Foreman. We'll bring that to you when we're back on Off to the Races.
Mark your calendars for the Grade 2 Charlestown Classic and Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks to be run once again on the same night, Friday, August 26th. This spectacular card features seven stakes races worth over $2.4 million in purses. A special first post time is scheduled for 5 o'clock Eastern under the Friday night lights. Live racing moves back to a Thursday through Saturday schedule starting in June with first post at 7 p.m. Eastern. So be sure to join us this summer for the best racing West Virginia has to offer. Here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
Champion Gunrunners, Full Brother Fortune Ticket, and the regally bred Group 1 winner Long River are just two of the exciting young stallions standing at Maryland's Anchor and Hope Farm. In his first year at stud, Fortune Ticket figures to be a hot commodity, standing for a fraction of the price of his big brother. And Long River's first runners should hit the track this year. Also at Anchor and Hope are leading regional stallions like Holy Boss, Editorial, Bourbon Courage, and Imagining. Anchor and Hope Farm, bringing the best to the Mid-Atlantic. Learn more at anchorhopefarm.com.
The leading sire of PA-bred two-year-old winners in 2021. Peace and Justice is the hottest young sire in Pennsylvania. Recently, the PHBA announced even more incentives, making now the time to breed and race in Pennsylvania. This year, over $600,000 in purses will be offered with the first-ever Pennsylvania two-year-old stallion series. Call today and book your mare to Peace and Justice, the only son of Warfront standing in Pennsylvania. Learn more at peaceandjusticepa.com.
And this is Frank's intro music, Frank Vespi, who interviewed Alan Foreman, who is counsel for the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. This is a little bit lengthy, but I thought there were just so many good comments, and it really is a great assessment of where HISA is and the difference between information and misinformation that may be out there. So starting off this segment here, Frank actually, his first question to Alan is basically what was the public message to the public about HISA and its implementation and what it does. Alan Foreman here has the answer.
Well, I think the most important message that HISA brings is that racing, which has historically been a state-sanctioned, state-controlled, state-regulated business, Now we'll have uniform standards across the board when it comes to what the public associates with doping, but more importantly for our purposes, the use of medications and therapeutic medications for the benefit of the safety, health, and welfare of the horse, and that we're also implementing national minimum standards to protect the health, safety, and welfare of our horses and riders. It's something that we have not had. It's something when we go from crisis to crisis, and it seems that's been the case over the past decade, certainly the last 5 years in particular, we have not been able to answer to the public as to what we do, how we do it, why we do it. And it has allowed animal rights groups, it's allowed legislators, it's allowed the media to question whether or not racing is an anachronism that ought to be eliminated, like the circus, like SeaWorld and others, or are we doing right by our equine athletes, and are we doing right by the integrity of our sport that justifies us to continue doing business into what we're now into the next century. So I think it's critical. I think it gives us the opportunity to address public concerns and to, I believe, when we run into problems and crises, that we have the ability to answer the questions for them and demonstrate that we are the most intensely regulated sport of any sport and that we're doing right by our equine athletes.
You personally had opposed some of the earlier versions of this legislation. This is legislation that the Jockey Club has been pushing for a number of years and spent a lot of money to get through. And you had sort of been on the anti side earlier and then did support this legislation. I'm curious as to what changed.
Earlier iterations were called the Horse Racing Integrity Act, and they were directed solely at medication and doping. The problem in our industry is horses that are dying on the racetrack, and I would challenge anyone to suggest that the reason that horses are dying on the racetrack is because of the illicit use of medication and doping agents. The original iteration also would have put the United States Anti-Doping Agency, which regulates medication in many human sports, the Olympic movement, in control of anti-doping and medication in horse racing, for which they have absolutely no qualification whatsoever. They're not even involved in the equine sport around the world when it comes to the performance horse industry. So we thought they were woefully unqualified and would set up a paradigm in racing that I did not think would be good for racing. To me, the bigger problem in racing was the lack of national standards for equine safety and welfare. Excuse me. And I got that baptism under fire when Governor Cuomo in New York appointed me to a task force with three others to investigate 21 fatalities at Aqueduct Racecourse in 2011-2012. And we conducted an intensive investigation. We made 48 recommendations regarding equine health, safety, and welfare, of which all of the recommendations were mandated and have essentially become national policy. And in the course of that investigation, we learned that the cause or causes of equine fatalities is multifactorial. Medication may have some involvement, but it can be racetrack surfaces. It can be weather. It can be pre-existing injuries, and identifying those risk factors was the most important thing we could do. So I continued to oppose the Horse Racing Integrity Act, and Congress agreed with me. And so, you know, you flash back a few years to the 30-plus fatalities at Santa Anita. That changed the whole dynamic for the industry. I think that there was clearly a national conversation that had begun as to whether or not horse racing should be allowed to continue. We simply cannot tolerate horses dying on our racetracks and not having answers to the public as to why it's happening. And so with intensive interest in Congress, and particularly in California, which is looking to ban horse racing, and California is a major racing state, and if California were to fall, the domino effect could, you know, move across the country. The interest that Belinda Stronach and the Stronach Group, which owns the Maryland tracks, had in equine safety. And then the Service and Navarro scandal involving, the doping of horses just put us, I think, in an untenuous position. And Senator McConnell from Kentucky, who pretty much controlled the Senate agenda, together with Senator Schumer, who led the Democratic majority, concluded that they were going to have to step in and do something. And so they worked with some industry leaders to amend what was the original Horse Racing Integrity Act to what is the current Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act, and built into the original bill a safety program, that safety program being the Mid-Atlantic Strategic Plan with some other nuances that we've been doing in the Mid-Atlantic and that we instituted 4 or 5 years ago. So, you know, I clearly had a change in thinking because I didn't think that the industry would survive the status quo. And I think that what's happened over the past few years has borne that out. And working with experts in drafting the legislation, Senator McConnell made clear he was going to pass the legislation. So it wasn't a question of whether it was going to happen or not. It's a question of what should it look like. And we got it into a position that I thought, you know, pretty much knocked the United States Anti-Doping Agency out of the equation as a controlling force, created a private entity overseen by the Federal Trade Commission with doping rules that, quite frankly, I think are going to help the industry, not hurt the industry, because it's going to make it easier to explain the difference between doping substances and therapeutic controlled medication substances and being able to differentiate between the two, which the public does not currently do. And with a safety program that I think is going to help to reduce fatalities, I think we're doing what we need to do going forward in the current environment and as the world has changed. So that's why I've become a supporter.
Talking with Alan Foreman, General Counsel of the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. We're talking about HISA, the Federal Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. And Alan, horsemen and really anyone who has a commission license just about has to register with HISA by July 1st. You guys held a forum Thursday at Laurel Park with a lot of horsemen in attendance and a lot more by Zoom. And there's been kind of a lot of angst about this registration thing. And, you know, one person said to me yesterday, said, we're being asked to agree to rules that aren't done and might change. That's not fair to us. What is your response to that?
So everyone has to remember that this is a federal mandate. It's a federal law. There's a federal statute that goes into effect on July 1. It is, for all intents and purposes, the program effective date. And the law requires that any individual who is a covered person is a licensed owner, trainer, breeder, jockey, backstretch person, veterinarian, anyone who works in connection with the health, safety, and welfare of the horse is required to register. The registration's for two purposes. One, HISA has to know who the covered persons are. It goes into their database. They're not asking horsemen to provide information that isn't otherwise available. But the statute requires that every covered person must register as a condition of racing. And it also provides in the statute that every horseman must affirm that they acknowledge the jurisdiction of HISA with respect to the programs that HISA covers. There are two programs. One is medication, drug testing, anti-doping, and the other is the safety program. That includes the racetracks, by the way. So anyone who is a stakeholder in the business is required to register. Now, what has happened with HISA, because of the program effective date is July 1, the safety program is in place. It has been approved by the Federal Trade Commission. And it virtually mirrors what we do in Maryland and what we do in the Mid-Atlantic with respect to safety standards and the safety program because of the work we've done with the Mid-Atlantic Strategic Plan to reduce equine fatalities. And it's why I've taken the position that with the program, it is not a heavy lift for the horsemen because there will not be substantial changes. The anti-doping program is still a work in progress, okay? Because HISA did not enter into an agreement with a third-party vendor as the enforcement agency, which the law requires. The United States Anti-Doping Agency was given the first crack at it. They could not reach an agreement with HISA, and so HISA went elsewhere. and recently entered into an agreement with the entity that does the enforcement program for Major League Baseball, the NFL, hockey, and otherwise. They're quite qualified. And they are developing the anti-doping program. As a result, the Federal Trade Commission, which has the jurisdiction and authority to implement delays, determined to delay the anti-doping program to January 1, 2023, which I think was of great benefit to the horsemen. Now, what the horsemen are complaining about is, well, since we don't see the rules, why should we affirm that we're going to be bound by the rules? Well, the answer is, number one, because the law mandates, regardless, you're going to be bound by the rules, number one. And number two, those rules change, and they can change frequently. And when you get a license from a racing commission, you make the same acknowledgement. You agree to be bound by the rules and regulations of the commission, and those rules change, and you're bound by them as they change. And as Heisen made clear yesterday, if a horseman registers by July 1 and then determines when the anti-doping program is developed that they're not comfortable with the new rules, they can unregister, in which case then they obviously will not be able to race. But they're going to see the program. They're going to have the ability to comment on the program. As I've indicated, let me just tell you that HISA has just released a proposed draft for public comment. And they are getting comment from the entire industry right now before they develop their is going to be their proposed rules to be sent to the Federal Trade Commission for additional public comment. Well, eventually the horsemen are going to know what that program is. I think it's, as I said yesterday, it's going to provide uniformity. Whatever the rules are, they're going to be the rules. The rules are going to be the same for everyone in every jurisdiction, not that you go to Pennsylvania and the rules different than Maryland or Delaware or New York, New Jersey, California. It's going to be one set of rules for everyone, one set of sanctions that will be, or punishments that will be uniform for everyone, and one new disciplinary system that will hopefully expedite what sometimes appear to be endless appeals and a gaming of the system, and a way in which for the industry to uniformly and fairly handle medication cases. And as I said earlier, I think one of the great benefits of what's going to happen with this program is it's going to divide medications and drugs into two separate baskets, which we've been trying to do for years. It's something that that's how we developed the multiple medication violation system that's been so successful in the Mid-Atlantic. You're going to have a basket of what are forbidden substances. They don't belong in a horse under any circumstance, and they're going to be treated as doping offenses. And that list of drugs is going to be for everyone to see. But there's going to be a second basket, and that's going to be the therapeutics, the controlled therapeutic medications. These are substances that are used and are necessary for the treatment of illness, injury, the health and welfare of the horse. There will be controls on those. Most of the violations we see in horse racing are in that category. They'll be treated differently, and I think that from the for the benefit of the industry, let alone the betting public will finally be able to understand, I think, and the media, that there is a difference that we use medications with horses. There are doping substances that have always been forbidden and we never want to see in a racehorse. And then there are those, because horses are treated on a daily basis for the best interests of their health, safety, and welfare, and we control them, and there are sometimes mistakes that cause violations, and we treat those differently, and they are not doping violations. So it's a very important public relations aspect to this.
Basically, we all want uniform drug rules. We all want safe racetracks. We all want to see the cheaters thrown out. Do you think Heise is going to be able to accomplish those things?
The most important reason for Heise is uniformity. And the horsemen here know what I talk about, because we've been trying to achieve uniformity using the Mid-Atlantic as an example for years. We've tried everything. We've tried it through the National Thoroughbred Racing Association. We've tried it through the Mid-Atlantic taking the lead. We've tried it through the creation of a compact. And there has always been an element in our industry that is satisfied with the status quo or opposes some of the changes or just doesn't want to see any change whatsoever. That's not tenable. It's untenable. It's simply not tenable any longer. And so what HISA is going to achieve is uniformity. And look, HISA probably, like anything else, will get off to a bumpy start until, we transition into HISA and people get used to it. I have suggested to Horstmann that it is not going to be a heavy lift because of the way we regulate ourselves here in Maryland. I don't think Virginia is any different, Delaware, except that everybody's going to be treated the same, the rules are going to be the same, and the discipline is going to be uniform. I think that the angst that we're feeling is there are some who simply are opposed to any system in which the federal government is involved. They think that's a prescription for disaster. There are some who just are satisfied with the status quo and will resist change, whatever that change is. Unless an appellate court enjoins this new paradigm, or the Supreme Court of the United States throws it out, this is going to preempt state law, and this is going to be the regulatory body and the regulatory scheme for medication and safety and welfare. And no question, there might be unease, but it's the law. I come down a little hard on that because you have to face the fact that this is going to be the law, that there's a new sheriff who's going to be overseeing this, and you're going to have to comply. And my job is not to sell HISA. I'm too much of the face of HISA. You know, instead of them, it's me. What I'm trying to do is educate our horsemen, because I think that's my responsibility, and get them to understand the system as best we can and to make the transition as smooth as possible. And I told them we'll have their back as we get into this program. They're going to need our help. And eventually, you know, we'll look back and say, well, you know, it was a bumpy road, but, this has been good for the business.
That's Alan Foreman, interviewed by Frank Vespi, explaining the HISA transition, if you will. Very important here, I think, just for all phases of the industry to get behind this and move forward. And you're not seeing it everywhere across the country, particularly Texas, which is it's another hour to explain that situation, but it'd be great to, and the Mid-Atlantic tracks, as Alan said, are way ahead of the game here. So I know that was a lengthy interview, but I thought many of the things Foreman said there were relevant, and I think it's going to be groundbreaking. 10 years from now, we're going to look back at this era as either being an era that made racing very successful or diminished it based on how HISA moves forward and gets implemented. I think it's sort of a critical time. And it's a critical time in the show here to think critically about different types of horses as we bring in Derby Bill on this Father's Day weekend to handicap some of the races from Royal Ascot. What is that, the Queen? The Queen did not make the races today, but Derby Bill standing by with an apt substitute. I'm sure that the Royal Ascot races had a big factor in determining your intro music, Derby Bill. Why the Bohemian Rhapsody today?
Because I'm just a poor boy from a poor family. Easy come, easy go. The gamblers, the degenerate is following up your lawyer. Your lawyer, and you went right from a lawyer, Mr. Foreman, to the degeneration.
Yeah, both from...
Foreman helping rent the George Foreman Grill, or is he just a lawyer?
Hey, you're both from Maryland. You're brothers of Maryland. You gotta go light on Alan Foreman. He's a key part of this industry. Yeah, but it's great to see.
I was actually born in D.C., so I'm a District of Corruption was my nickname.
Derby Bill, we had a common friend who tipped us off about a horse named In My Wake on Thursday. Bill Hanley was telling us a little bit about In My Wake, first-time starter in a $40,000 claiming race up at Monmouth Park for Christoph Clement, Trevor McCarthy aboard, a mile and a 16th in the turf. What does the horse do? He turns around and wins at over 7-1. I bet you there were some celebrations over in Midlothian late week. What do you think?
Yeah, nice combination there. I guess it was a turf race. I didn't get to see it. I was ill. But Clement and you said Trevor McCarthy?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, Trevor had a big week. He went up to Penn National and won with the Eons in the match series for George Foreman. I mean, Mr. Foreman's match series. He won with the Eons.
Okay.
And the Buckland Stakes champion from last year will be returning to Colonial Downs to defend his title with Trevor. But the Hanley thing is they've been trying for a while getting a New York horse to win. So that's great news for them.
They had that highly – I forget the name of the horse that ran up at Saratoga just – Clement had didn't like his chances, but obviously ran well. There are a number of stakes races. Don't want to miss out that Laurel has three turf stakes on Father's Day tomorrow. So if you happen to be in the area, maybe not a bad idea for dear old dad to take him to the racetrack and have him seek a couple of winning tickets. But today at Monmouth Park, perhaps. Well, let's start with Royal Ascot. Want to save Monmouth here for the late half of the show. What are your thoughts to Platinum Jubilee? We don't get a chance to handicap a 27-horse field very often. That includes King's Lynn, who is owned by the Queen, not the actual Queen, not the rock group that introduced you. But what are your thoughts in the Platinum Jubilee that starts in about 25 minutes from now?
About 25 minutes. There's one, two, three scratches, so it's down to a real small field of 24. But the handicapping over there this week has been unbelievable. I've seen $27,000 trifecta today. They had one. And Ryan Moore, the jockey's won six times, so he's pretty much putting Ortiz to sleep. Ortiz Jr. went over there, and he's really had a riffraff with Wesley, but yeah. They're teaming up for this one with Camp Alley, Wesley Ward, and I read about 11-1 as I look at the glance at the NBC board.
5-1 in the morning.
11-1, very fair price on the horse, but really like the British Racing because number 11 is 200-1. Nick, I mean they don't do that in America. And what I mean 100-1, the 18 horse. It's just fabulous. I love it.
100-1,
horses. Yeah, it's just, more pinning it down. But these races are nuts. I mean, you just pick a number. They got something like an Omni Swinger where you box four horses and just pray. Or play your best. It's just unbelievable how many long shots have come in over there.
I pray when I box four horses in a five-horse field.
No, I know. I have enough trouble, with Monmouth Park and obviously Canterbury, the Mystic next week. The Mystic Derby will have Miss Lawn having the one that, what's the one? Long on Value won that race one time and came big time from Colonial Downs. So gives us something to look forward to Wednesday. And then last night was, Penn National, some horses that are coming to Colonial Downs. And you said to Laurel, the Stormy Blues is one. The three stakes on a beautiful day in Laurel Sunday. I mean, they're all brandy and three turf races. So you'll see a bunch of them horses come down from that. And then the Monmouth today obviously has this all stakes pick four with three grade threes, they're all on turf too. So hopefully the weather holds. And they actually have a horse in the Edenton, which is the first race of the pick four for me called Princess Grace. So if you're tying it all together with Ascot, Princess Grace is 7-2. Florent Giroux is in that one. So, that's some connections you can make to Ascot, but not many. It's a Michael Stedman horse, so you remember Princess Grace. Ran at Colonial Downs maiden race. Won its maiden at Colonial Downs.
Yeah, that's went from went to Del Mar, late in the year last year. The four stakes.
Go ahead.
the four stakes at Monmouth, the Eatonton, Eatontown, the 12th, the Pegasus, the TBG.com Pegasus Stakes is actually on the dirt, but then you have the Monmouth Stakes, which is a mile and an eighth on the turf, and then they conclude with the Salvatore Mile, which is a mile on the turf. So actually the Salvatore Mile is not on the turf. So yeah, so but still, that especially with a pick four that it's lining up with Colonial during the meet, that'll be, it may as well get a jump on handicapping Monmouth, and today is a good day to do that. Who else do you like today?
The leader at Monmouth said two races at Monmouth and two at Colonial Downs. So this is definitely a nice time, nice day to take a look at Monmouth, because most people don't follow Monmouth too often. Electability in the Pegasus Stakes just looks pretty much like a single. So if you're going to single one, I think he ran in the Peter Pan last time. So there's very quality horses in here. The Monmouth Stakes is the 13th, about 547, or back nine of the U.S. Open. Has a horse called Hidden Stash, 15-1, Nick. Hidden Stash.
Ran in the Derby.
Yeah, 15-1. I mean, he's coming in here. We'll make his, he's ran on the turf too. He's ran on the turf and dirt. So I'm going to give Hidden Stash and Sacred Life a shot there. And then you have your finish, Nick. You'll like this horse. Some horse called Hot Rod Charlie in the rear end of the Salvador Mile. You've heard of Hot Rod Charlie.
Just a little bit. Of course, of course, very contentious in the Triple Crown last year, and you know, came back and won that big race in Dubai. You know, didn't win the World Cup, ran second in that to Country Grammar, but yeah, Hot Rod Charlie going up against Nick's Go, and a very talented Oxbow horse, Doug O'Neill's horse there, Mike Smith.
They got mind control in that race too. Another one that I have no control over. So I like the name.
Yep.
Mind control.
Derby Bill, we'll recap all the racing action next week on off. Actually, no show next week. I failed to remember to put that out enough, but we will be off taking a break before the long sustained run for racing at Colonial Downs, which starts July 11th. As the Rolling Stones take us in to the conclusion of the show, I want to thank Jill Byrne, who joined us after a run through Churchill, Daryl Wood, who joined us, I'm sure, after a walk, Derby Bill, who just needs to join us. We always love to have Derby Bill on the show. Alan Foreman and Frank Vespi gave us an extensive background of HISA. I'm your host, Nick Hahn. James Flowers, rather, great job. And we'll see you next week on Off to the Races Post, or actually in 2 weeks, Off to the Races Post Time, 10 o'clock in 2 weeks.